Customer's Pet.
Hey everybody, welcome back. We are on episode 2 of season 4. We still know what episode it is, assuming that what was planned out actually worked last week. So hopefully this is actually correct. But it should be episode 2 of season 4. And we have a returning guest who has been not begging, but casually, consistently poking, saying, hey, bring me back. So at Two Fertile Church, Karen Terrazas is back with us today to talk about, I mean, if you don't understand by now, if you see Karen on here, that means it's going to be something heavily controversial that most people don't want to talk about, which is why she keeps dugging me to do it. So, is true. You can't deny it. Yes.
So, agree.
Karen is with us. Yes. So Karen's with us, and we are going to be having a discussion that is, unfortunately, it's another one where people are going to claim this is politically motivated. They're going to claim that it's all feminism motivated. They're going to claim that everything we do is heresy and possibly even antichrist. But what we're going to actually do today is talk about a very difficult issue that the church has not handled well, and talk about why it hasn't been handled well and why it's not a political issue. Why it is not a feminist issue, why it is not any of these sort of things, but overall it is a theological issue going back again to Imago Dei, which is pretty much everything that you and I do together, including stuff online. So,
pretty much.
Karen, do you want to introduce the topic for us?
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you for having me, and yes, I have been poking him quite a lot, but in light of the decision in Alabama, I was like, you have to bring me on to talk about this. So
those were her exact words, actually. You have to. There was no asking, can I come talk about this? We're doing this set up the time.
And for those of you who are not aware or who have forgotten, because it was many news cycles ago at this point, within the last month, the Alabama Supreme Court put down a decision granting personhoods to embryos outside of the uterus. So directly affecting parents seeking IVF treatment to be able to have children. And it has had sweeping consequences in the state of Alabama and in the larger discussion of infertility, advanced reproductive technologies, and the ethics behind them. So that's what I want to talk about today.
Yes. And so as always, if Karen is on, you also should know there'll be plenty of receipts and plenty of homework coming in as well. So if you have no idea what we are talking about, So we're recording this in March, so it will have maybe been closer to 2 months by the time you're listening to this, if you're listening on release. There was a decision in Alabama, but one that is not only affecting Alabama, because this, like you said, it's affecting the entire conversation, and even more than just the conversation around the politics of it, it's affecting the way that evangelicalism, for the most part, is talking about things like reproductive health, which there's a reason we use that phrase. It's not the politically correct phrase. It is the actual thing that is being addressed. This is not a pro-life versus anti-abortion versus pro-choice versus whatever. This conversation specifically is about actual health. And that is where we need to start from the theology standpoint of this as well, is actually talking about this well. It's the exact same sort of thing, just a different side of the same discussion about what happened here in my state in Ohio back at the last election with issue one. Everybody started talking about it as if this was a pro-life or pro-choice thing, when in reality, The actual issue that was voted on had nothing to do with abortion and everything to do with what doctors were allowed to do. It was all yes. about doctor decisions and health, not actually about pro-life versus pro-choice. Now, to also yes. make it clear before people start muting us and throwing our names around where it doesn't belong, if you did not listen to the last time Karen was on where we actually talked about infertility, we made it very clear that she comes from a pro-life stance. She understands it better than most. To make it clear for those that still haven't figured it out, everybody within the Misfits setting would be able to be classified as pro-life biblically. In addition to that, to make sure that there's some credibility for people to understand that we do actually know what we're talking about. Again, Karen has plenty of receipts and is doing all this research for an upcoming project that is yet to be named. I also want to make sure people are aware that this isn't just talk. We've dealt with this stuff on the ground. I was the chaplain for the Cuyahoga County Pregnancy Center for 2.5-3 years and was one of the only pastors that was there on staff. So before anybody wants to start talking about how this is just some political hit piece against quote unquote pro-life Christians, you may want to know who you're talking about. Now that that's been addressed.
And I want to put out there for full disclosure, my husband and I decided early on in our infertility journey that IVF was not on the table for the two of us. So I don't have a personal beef in favor or against IVF due to my own circumstance. This is purely from an ethical, theological, yes. and legal standpoint of my concern for women that are faced with difficult choices and having the freedom to become parents in a way that they have deemed ethically. Because I do believe that there can be, people can come down on different sides of the issue on IVF, and I do not think we can say that there is one right way, because it is an ever-changing, ever-advancing field. That is seeking to protect and procreate life in ways that have never before been available to us as humanity.
So that actually, before we even get into the actual discussion part of it, this is an important piece, is that part of the issue with this is that it's something that is being written into law.
Yeah.
And so before we even get into the, you know, some would argue gross, but the scientific details of all of this,
mm-hmm.
the first thing we, again, and if you've listened to Misfits at all, you already know where I'm going with this, but just bear with me because some don't. We as Christians are not called to put our morality into law. Plain and simple. So that's the first part of the discussion in terms of what we're dealing with in terms of, well, where should the church land on this? Is that why are we trying to push one side of the argument into law, especially when we don't even have the theology to back up our side of the argument or the science to back up our side of the argument, which is part of what we're about to get into. So let's start with Karen. Give As family friendly of a version, describe for us what we actually are talking about when we talk about IVF. Because again, this is part of the problem, is people don't even know what it is. So what is it that we are actually talking about?
So IVF is a process to help couples that have been unable to have children through more conventional or natural means to have children. And this is done by first giving the woman a series of drugs that will increase the number of eggs she will produce in a given cycle. Then those eggs are retrieved and are graded just on them their own. And they'll take the best eggs that are retrieved and then they will take sperm that has been previously retrieved from the man, and they will physically put the sperm and egg together, giving the absolute best chance for fertilization to happen. And this happens in a test tube, which is why when this first started happening, these children were called test tube babies. So after the egg and the sperm have met, they then wait 3 to 5 days and they watch these fertilized eggs and see what happens. And one concern that people bring up is the fact that between 50 to 80% of fertilized eggs do not make it to the 3 to 5 day mark where implantation into the woman happens. And that is because these eggs fail to keep dividing. So they'll start dividing, but then they'll stop at 24, 48 cells, and that's it. It's done. That life cycle is over.
Which, if you have no idea what she's talking about, this is basic biology. Like, most high school biology, if not high school, early college biology courses, you should have gone through this at some point. If not, you've never taken a health class.
Right. Just saying. So the fertilized eggs that make it to the point of implantation, and they're usually hoping to get 4. So they want to start out with 12 eggs, and your goal is to get 4 embryos. They will then be graded, and the best embryos are then implanted into the mother. Here's the thing, is all embryos are allowed to be implanted, just not together. Like, back in the Wild West days of the early 80s, when IVF was brand new, they would implant 4, 6, 8 eggs or embryos. They don't do that anymore. 2 is your max. And so if you have 4 embryos, you can do 2 transfers to put all 4 in. There's never a reason that parents are forced to discard embryos. And I want to make that clear, because that is one of the issues at discussion, is yes, there are millions of embryos that are in frozen states right now, but that's not because they're being forced to, that's because their parents are making that choice. And that is a discussion for those parents to have. But if a Christian is willing to have every embryo, I do not see an ethical problem with this process.
Well, and before we even get to the ethics behind it, just even the wording that is used is something that we as Christians need to look at, whether you are involved with the IVF part of it in terms of your relationship or not. Mm-hmm. The phrase that, one of the problems that we hear is that there are Christians that have a problem with using the word embryo. Because we need to just call them babies. Embryo is the correct term. Like, scientifically speaking, that is the correct term. We use that term when we talk about animals in this state. Mm-hmm. Somehow we have a problem with talking about when it's humans in this state. But at the same time, and this is not all, this is just something that you and I have heard, at least growing up around this discussion, is the phrase that you used before, as far as where they have been called test tube babies, which is actually more dehumanizing. To call somebody an embryo, which is a natural state, or to
we were all embryos at one point,
or to tell somebody that you were made in a lab.
Yeah.
Again, this is part of the problem we have with a lot of different things, but this, especially around this topic, where there's so much science and so much health involved, and there is so much nuance between every individual human on the planet, is that even the language we are choosing to use already is showing where our focus is actually at in the discussion. Because if you're claiming that your focus is just on the embryos' lives, why do you have a problem calling them embryos? If your focus is on the lives of the embryos, but you want to just call them test tube babies, while also making other statements about how you deny other scientific things going on in a lab, how can you even try to reconcile that it is actually about senseless slaughter or lives lost, when the way we even talk about it is denying the fact that these are image bearers in the first place.
Agreed.
Go ahead.
I would say I've even seen some people say just things about wondering about the humanity of frozen embryos that are implanted later on, and, you know, questioning why people would go down that route. And for me, given that there are millions of snowflake babies, is another term, mm-hmm. Some of them are up for adoption. Embryo adoption is a thing. Mm-hmm. And yet I have seen it actively discouraged in church settings. But to me, that is the apex of pro-life, life begins at conception, would be, well, let's right. implant these babies. To get them out of the limbo that theologically they are in.
Well, and this is the same discussion we had when we had the infertility and adoption discussion as well.
Yes.
Is that we want to claim that this is the correct Christian stance, mm-hmm. that you have to have children, and yep. that if you can't have them biologically, you have to adopt. And so we need to or that it's the answer to abortion is just adoption. And so we just need to adopt.
Right.
But we put limits on who we will adopt. We put limits on what is acceptable in terms of a human life. Mm-hmm. We put terms and all these different things. And this is what the world around us is seeing.
Yeah.
Is that the nuances that we try to claim as Christians culturally are ones that get us out of having to actually care for other people, rather than nuances that allow us to see other people as image bearers, even when we disagree with them.
Yep, agreed.
So absolutely walk agreed. Us through the rest of this discussion, because like you said, part of the issue that we have is that people don't even know what's going on with it. You've given us the Reader's Digest health lesson. But there's a lot of other stats and things at play here, because again, unfortunately, this has been turned into a political machine just like everything else.
Yeah.
So give us a couple of the other things that are going on as far as why we actually are having to have this discussion.
Well, one, children born via IVF are way more common than we want to think about. The stat I showed you was that 2% of all children born have been conceived via IVF. And as infertility rates go up, which they are going up, it's going to become more and more common.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the fact of the society we live in. But when we have people that are arguing things that they do not understand, it now presents a problem, because I have lost track of the number of people that when you ask them their problem with IVF, assuming that all embryos are implanted, the thing that they now go back to is the number of eggs that are fertilized that do not reach the embryonic stage. Even though that is a natural thing that occurs, that is a natural life cycle that those fertilized eggs had, and happens inside women. And it's only been in the last several decades that we understand that close to 70% of eggs that are fertilized do not result in live births. And we only know this because of very advanced, highly sensitive pregnancy tests that can see those hormones spike and then drop within a matter of weeks, because of this is something that naturally happens. And we can go into speculation as to why, but my concern, because I see how militant people are, is if you start valuing the potential of life over the existing life of the woman in front of you, where do you stop? So I have had 7 miscarriages, and they have all been early miscarriages, which means most of the time that egg has not fully implanted into my uterus before my body is like, never mind. That is my reality, and I grieve for each one of those 7 children, but I am aware of how the discussion could paint me in a potentially dangerous light, because it is painfully obvious that for whatever reason, my body is incompatible with producing life. So do we now try to punish and criminalize women for getting pregnant if they know that they cannot sustain that pregnancy?
Especially while, at least within certain sects of Christianity, are going to claim that if you as a woman do not get pregnant, then you are violating the laws of God.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so this is part... Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and then the next step is since we have brought the goalpost all the way back to just eggs that have been fertilized, the only step farther back than that is the actual unfertilized eggs, which are a much rarer commodity than the male counterpart. And so nobody talks about regulating that.
Well, and that's part of where ultimately we knew this discussion was going to go, which is why we gave the disclaimers we did at the beginning, is that a lot of the talks about infertility, about things like IVF, about things like abortion, a lot of them come back centered in on specifically a power dynamic within society, which is part of why this is a theological issue.
Yeah.
Is because it's a power dynamic that people try to use scripture to uphold.
Yep.
And so, you know, this was the big discussion with, I know we're going to hear about the fact that we just reminded people of this, but we're going to have to. So buckle in, people. The Gospel Coalition article that was released last year. Yeah, if those watching, you can see exactly what the idea of sex became about a power dynamic. Even though it was painted in a theological light, a very disgusting theological light, but a theological light, it was presented as a part of a power dynamic that the argument is that is what God intends. Which then continues on when you then say that act is only about reproduction and that act is the only thing that women are valued for.
Yep.
And then when you continue down the line, eventually get to the idea of the fact that anything involving life, involving babies, mom is 100% responsible for. And so if things go wrong, she is the mistake.
Yep.
There's no way around that line of thinking. That is the only way it can go. This is part of why we said from the beginning, this isn't some big feminist work piece. This is the reality of what a theology that does not understand the Imago Dei will always ultimately produce.
Yeah.
So how do we actually need to go about? Well, we'll start with the initial conversation that was brought up, and then we'll go into the bigger conversation from that. How should we as believers actually go about addressing things like IVF and other things in the news related to it? What would you say is actually what our responsibility to all this looks like?
I would say your responsibility is, especially if you are either A, dealing with infertility, or B, a pastor that has a couple in front of you that's dealing with infertility, is you need to get up on the latest research. Do not depend on a book that you were given in the 1980s about IVF. It's outdated. It's wrong. Toss it out. Google IVF and look at legitimate sources. CDC, the National Health Agency for Great Britain, you know, look at those, look at their information. And then discuss ways how the couple feels that they can do it ethically. Because, again, I agree, there are ethical questions that have to be answered. And that may look different for every single couple. But you need to first be on the page of where the reality is at this moment in time. Not 30 years ago. Not 10 years ago. Not even 5 years ago. Because it is such an advancing science that is moving forwards at lightning speed.
Well, and even not just the science, the evangelical position keeps moving forward at lightning speed, because the evangelical position going back into the 70s was different than what it became in the 80s.
Yeah.
Even on the idea of what constituted life and when abortion, what about abortion, all of these different things changed in the 80s.
Yes.
And now it is continuing with the same rate of speed to change from it is just about the unborn child to now where we are saying now it is about all life itself, which means that all this is a criminal act. And some of the same pastors that are saying this from their pulpits are the same ones that 40 years ago would have just been like, what are you talking about, if they had heard their own sermons?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because 40 years ago, it was a Catholic issue. The Catholics had their view on it. And I can actually respect the Catholics' reasoning for why they've come down how they have on this issue. It's consistent within their theology, and it doesn't attack the imago Deo of the man and woman. It is just, okay, you are not meant to have children. End of story. But evangelicals,
there's two words you said there that I think need to be highlighted. As you said, one, you can respect their position.
Yeah.
And the other one is that in the reverse,
it's consistent.
It's consistent. It's consistent, and it's one that is consistently respecting other people. It's consistent with their other theology. It's consistent with the mission of the church. It's consistent with everything. It comes to a different conclusion.
Yeah.
But it's consistent. And it's one that, because it's consistent, people can actually respect it.
Yeah. But the evangelical position changes on a whim. Yeah,
the problem now.
And it changes based on how they think it's going to help future power dynamics. Not, this is something we have put in stone from the 1500s. And so I think you need to be up on the science so that you're not just spewing nonsense, because I've seen a lot of nonsense spewed. And you need to have a consistent theology of reproduction and imago Deo that can be brought to bear on the hard conversations that will be had. Does life begin at conception? I believe it does. But does that mean that if a cell stops dividing, that it wasn't life? Well, that now we're getting to hard, very hard philosophical questions. But if you want to ask that question, that's fine. But don't demand other people conform to your view on something that's so in the minutiae of the science.
Well, especially if your view is coming from one that is not up to date.
Yes. Yeah.
Which that's a big thing. You know, Tomiko and I talked about this, you know, in his intro back in January, is that and we talked about this with Beth Allison Barr also, is the anti-intellectual push Well, I mean, I don't know. I think I saw you weigh in on it also. Just this week as we're recording this, there was a big thing about the fact that it's sinful for women to enter seminary. The reason that they're saying that is they're trying to tie it to women in ministry. But what is becoming very clear, as we pointed out, is that it's actually tied to women having theological knowledge.
Yep.
Because if you have the knowledge, then there's a potential for the power dynamic shifting, which is what we've seen all throughout history. I mean, that is literally the story of civilization all throughout history. The people that win battles are the ones that are more educated than the other one. Whether it's by technology or strategy or knowing the land, the reason that army won is because they outsmarted the other one.
Yep.
It's a natural desire to not want education for the people that oppose us. But the key thing I said was it's a natural desire. Mm-hmm. We as Christians are called to more than that. We should actually be educated in this stuff. We should educate in this stuff, because how are we supposed to have these kind of conversations? Which is the other side, I think, and you know, we can get into this a little bit. The other side is we don't educate ourselves because we don't want to have these conversations because they make us uncomfortable.
Yeah. And people would rather put out their pithy statements, not grounded in knowledge, but have high click value than think about it. Like, I literally roll my eyes every time I see someone that says, oh, don't ever go to a fertility clinic. They will push you straight to IVF. And I'm like, no, that is not how fertility clinics work. And they are not going to push IVF on a patient that they don't think it will be successful for, because those numbers are published. They are required by law to publish their success rates, which means they are not going to purposely drive down their success rates for a quick buck.
Well, and in some, I believe there are, in some cases, even there are reports of when doctors are found to be pushing something, especially something that has low success rates, they're at risk for losing their license. So they're not going to be, unless, and again, this is where the theology side of it comes back to, is that unless we are pushing this idea that certain doctors are actually servants of some foreign, either some foreign power is one argument, or some spiritual power, why do we think that somebody's going to put their career on the line just for something like this? Unless we believe that it is being driven by some kind of antichrist movement.
Yeah.
In which case, now we have the moral high ground over everything.
Well, anytime you get into conspiracy theory thinking, you're just, you're dealing with things that are just dishonest by nature, because everything is going to be conformed to your conspiracy. But like my fertility clinic that I used in Arizona, I was presented with 10 options before IVF and was like, we will go to whatever you're comfortable with and we'll stop. And the thing is because of where Brandon and I were in our journey at that point, like we didn't really pursue a lot of it, but they have constantly been there for every pregnancy I've had going, okay, here are your drug protocols that we will put you on to try to help you keep this baby. And they've never charged me a dime, because it's like, we're just calling in a prescription. So this idea that they just want to automatically push you to the extreme end of ARTs is ridiculous on its face. That is not their goal. That is not their purpose. Their purpose is to have a successful clinic that has babies that they can plaster all over their boards.
Right. That's how you get grants.
Yeah.
Is by showing success, or by being able to show that something is unsuccessful by showing an alternative that is successful.
Yeah.
So there is no benefit for that, which is part of why, at least within the more extreme fringes of these discussions, suddenly the concepts and talks around abortion, IVF, around, I mean, there's all sorts of different things related to this discussion regarding babies in general, is that they want to tie everything back to Moloch, who, if you don't know who Moloch is, that's because there's really no reason to know who he is, which is literally part of the point of the stories that we have within scripture, which is another topic that gets on my nerves, but whatever. You know, the Canaanite gods was a pantheon of gods, but all of them were basically just different iterations of the same one, Baal or Asherah, yeah, depending on if it was male or female. Moloch was one of these gods. Possibly the scholars are torn. It may actually be three different ones even. But the main thing that it was identified for was the idea of human sacrifice, specifically child sacrifice. So the argument that we hear is that America is worshiping Moloch because of the fact that we have abortion.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of problems, with this. But the first one that is a major problem is in something that Karen already has addressed related to the IVF. How can we call it child sacrifice if the entire purpose is to create life rather than take it away? You deal with these kind of arguments more than I do. What is your response to those kind of statements?
I find it just droppingly amazing that they don't seem to hear themselves, that, you know, they act as if the entire reproductive fertility industry is all about destroying life, when that is the antithesis of its point. This is a multi-billion dollar industry devoted to helping people have children, and they've gotten good at it. Is it 100%? No. I mean, IVF is still sitting at about a 40% success rate.
Which, again, is part of the point you made earlier, is that they're better at it, but the success rate is still not even at 50%. So
yeah. Yeah, we're looking at 40%. And most couples, if they're willing to go through everything, will eventually have a child. It just takes a lot. And not everyone is willing to put themselves through that emotional and physical repercussions for a child. And that is okay. It is okay to stop.
Again, this is part of what we talked about when you were on the first time, is the fact that, again, the way that we just pass over the trauma involved, mm-hmm, with things like infertility, with things like miscarriages, with even the adoption side of it.
Yeah.
You know, we want to just look at the end product and have nothing to do with the process behind it, or the pain behind it, or the testing, all this other stuff, which is pretty much standard for the way that we go about treating everything culturally, is that we hold up the finished product and you just ignore how we got there.
Yeah. Well, and like that's something that really struck me with the Alabama Supreme Court ruling, is I think of all the poor women that were days away from their transfer date, because this is such a sensitive, very time sensitive thing. And if they miss that window, they have to start their protocols all over. And I don't know how those clinics do their protocols, but it can be up to a 3-month process to get a woman ready for a transfer. And so if they had one scheduled a week after that Supreme Court decision, even though the Alabama legislature has now passed an emergency law to like cover IVF clinics, even though not all of them are accepting it, so one of them is still like, we're not sure. All these women now have to start their protocols. And these are painful drugs that we are giving women, and they are subjecting their bodies to incredible pain and discomfort in the hopes of having a child. No one is wanting to destroy this child. And I am in, or not so much now, but I have been on message boards where people will literally have blown up pictures of their embryo because that is their first baby photo.
Mm-hmm.
They only get that because they're going through a very expensive procedure that has allowed them to actually physically see their embryo before an ultrasound could. But, like, they prize these babies and they mourn. Like, they will get, like, you will get updates of, like, 12 eggs retrieved, 8 fertilized, and then they will mourn every step where those numbers mm-hmm. fall. Because they're hoping for one to actually make it to a live birth, but they are not just, they do not just toss away those others. Each one of those now, is like, oh my goodness, I'm down to 4. Please let one stick.
So the darker question that comes up with that, and this is one that I've seen you have the conversation. I believe I was, I don't remember if you drugged me into it kicking and screaming or if I joined it or not, is the conversation that comes around the IVF discussion as far as the fact that this is just women trying to play God. Because obviously God has told you, you are not supposed to have children and now you are going above and beyond his will. What is the response there?
You cannot tell women or tell girls from the time that they are old enough to understand that motherhood is their highest calling and that motherhood is what God calls them to be, and then slap them for doing everything possible to be a mother. If you don't want women to feel that they have to have biological children by any means possible, fix the theology that you teach them from the time they're 4 years old. So I am okay from a moral standpoint of talking about whether this is playing God or not. Like, I agree that is a discussion, but you cannot have that discussion while telling women that they have to be mothers.
And that is the big piece behind all of this. Is that, again, the objections to IVF that are claiming to be theological objections are nothing more than power dynamics at play.
Well, yeah.
It has nothing to do with life. It has everything to do with control of others' lives.
Yeah, because, like, to get back to the Catholic Church, which, again, has a firm stance against all ARTs, and birth control in general, they also have a long history of ways for women to serve beyond motherhood. I am not a Catholic. I am a proud Protestant, but I can recognize the fact that the Catholic Church has provided a means for women to serve outside of motherhood that is consistent with how they talk about the issues around reproduction.
Well, and even beyond the women, they also have a very, unfortunately, a very public history of not doing this, but they also do have a very long, long, long history of, if nothing else, putting their money where their mouth is to care for the children.
Yeah.
In every part of the world.
Yeah.
Again, consistency is big. Because mm-hmm. if you're going to tell women that they have to be mothers, but then say, but you can only be mothers one way, that's inconsistent. Unless yep. you're telling them that God gets to decide whether you're a woman or not.
Oh, yeah. Well, simultaneously. Yeah. That's,
yeah.
I mean, that is a whole other discussion that I've had with people.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. Those ones I typically, when I see those, I typically do jump in.
Yeah.
Which is part of why you were able to say, yeah, we're doing this on air. But the other, you know, it's the same discussion we've had with a lot of other different issues.
Mm-hmm.
if we are actually going to address these things and claim it to be a theology, it's got to be grounded in love, love of God and love of others. Because if we are loving God, then our heart is going to be in the right place with all this as far as when we make the decision whether or not. Because if we're, like you said, we're not going to have the full discussion now, even though we probably could. The idea of it being that you just want to play God is ignoring the desire to see another image bearer on the earth. Even if that's even something as simple as that, of the fact that children are there. I mean, this is biblical. Children are there to bring us joy. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the few biblical statements that can be thrown out as far as the reason why you're supposed to have kids that actually would be acceptable.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of other ones that are unacceptable. And we talked about that last time you were here. The idea of the fact that children are there to bring us joy is a good statement. We have no problem with that statement as long as we are consistent about what we mean by that and actually want to care for those children and not just use them as a prop for our own power plays.
Yeah.
You know, these discussions have to be grounded in love of God and loving others.
Yep.
Because if it is about the baby's lives, then we shouldn't be categorizing the fact that this child is going to have this may be an opportunity for this child to have life and calling it a death factory.
Yeah. It's not. And like, I had someone snarkily tell me, like, well, there's such a high attrition rate because it's not natural for babies to be in that state. I'm like, okay, well, that is a discussion we can have, but that is not the purpose of the clinic. The purpose of the clinic is to produce life. And the high attrition rate is an unfortunate thing that we can see. But as I said before, we know happens naturally within mm-hmm. women themselves. Because having a baby is... everything has to line up perfectly, and it truly is a miracle. Even if we have figured out how to play God, it's still a miracle when it happens.
I mean, it's the same conversation we've had about things like mental health, things like regular health, everything else, in terms of the fact that why is it that we suddenly want to claim that this is unnatural and that God is void from it?
Yeah.
When science gets involved, rather than maybe recognizing that, hey, look at how God is moving within the world today.
Well,
with the fact that we now are able to do this. He's given us the knowledge to do this.
None of these people would say that a pacemaker is unnatural. I mean, by definition it is, but the purpose of a pacemaker is to extend life. But there's still going to be a failure rate. I don't know what it is. Example off the top of my head, there's still going to be a failure rate. Yeah, there's still going to be a failure rate to pacemakers, but we're not going to accuse the pacemaker doctors and factories of killing people. It's like, no, the purpose is to extend life. Because without the pacemaker, people will... Yeah.
I mean, this is the same discussion we had when we talked about gun rights and everything like that as far as Christians are concerned. We want to claim IVF and fertilization clinics and all this stuff are death factories while trying to claim that weapons factories are promoting life.
Oh my
goodness. Which one of these things is actually sacrificing our children? The one that is putting it into their hands to promote death, or the one that is giving them an opportunity to experience life?
Yeah.
But we can't ever have that conversation, because if we start that conversation, immediately that is labeled as just being politics in the church, and that's got to get out of here. But we can talk about IVF in the church, because IVF is just another form of Moloch sacrifice, and so that's a theological issue that we have to defeat. We've got it completely backwards.
Yeah.
And it is not steeped in politics. It's steeped in understanding the Imago Dei and what our call as a church actually is. She's typing.
So
she's looking something.
Yeah, I'm Googling. Well, I'm Googling. Well, because I know that the leading cause of death of children is firearms, but I'm actually curious if it has actually suppressed the number of abortions done in a year.
Per year, I don't think it has. Well, I don't know. I haven't looked at it since the Obergefell decision, so I'm not sure. It was not surpassed, but it was getting pretty close.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's passed it yet, but it's on its way.
Obviously,
like, one of the most ironic things is post Dobbs, abortion has gone up in the United States.
Dobbs decision. Yeah. Why did I say Obergefell?
I don't know. Maybe because I don't know. But yeah, post Dobbs, abortions have gone up across the United States. So we are the dog that caught the car. And we had no idea how to actually lower abortion rates beyond trying to do it by fiat, which isn't working. Because if you do not give women...
We can't even begin to lower...
Yeah. If you do not give women the resources where they feel...
rates in general.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you do not give women resources... the resources so that they feel that they even have a choice to have their child, no law is going to change what they feel they have to do.
And especially when we talk again in the church circles, when what they feel like they have to do is drilled into them that this is the only thing God has designed you for.
Yeah.
Like how can we have... And especially then when, I mean, there are countless other podcasts out there that are built around the fact that the only way to deal with that is therapy. But then we also will tell you that therapy is also sinful. This is the problem that we have. And this is part of why I like bringing you on is because, one, your facial reactions are great for whoever's watching. But beyond that...
Great. I'm going to get memed at some point. It's going to go famous, and it's going to be your fault. So.
Yeah, well, I can make you into a t-shirt, too, if you want.
No.
You know, yeah. So, you know, when you and I have these discussions, whether it's on air or online... Every one of the conversations that you and I get involved with that are actually some kind of serious matter outside of the just stupid stuff, the serious matter stuff we get involved with all comes down to the way that we as believers are. It deals with the way that we are showing people who we actually view God to be.
Yeah.
And what that actually leads to as far as how we treat other people.
Yeah.
Because it's not IVF was the thing that's like, hey, we're doing this. But IVF is in some ways the minor issue here.
IVF is just
the tip of the iceberg, because the bigger picture, again, is the fact that we are telling people that our view of God is a God that hates progress within medicine, that does not care about a person's mental well-being, that does not care about their health, that does not care about their wants and desires, even desires that we are telling them that God wants them to have.
Mm-hmm.
That is the picture of God that we are painting when we do not talk about these sort of things well. And we can even have these discussions in a way where, like you've been saying this whole time, you have no problem with the way the Catholic Church has painted this their whole picture surrounding this thing, even though you disagree with it.
Yeah.
but yet there are, I know because I've seen it happen, there are people that come from the same theological tradition as you that tell you that you are not a Christian because of the fact that you don't line up with their views, which even the Catholic Church dismisses.
Yeah, and I find it especially ironic because I am willing to hold space for people to come to a different conclusion than I have, that I am still somehow responsible for their choice. Like, again, IVF was never on the table for my husband and I because that was a decision we came to together. It was our choice, and we have our reasonings for doing that. But I do not want to deny someone else that choice and their chance to wrestle with God on this issue.
Right. That's what I was going to say. I know you guys well enough to know that when you say you came to that conclusion, it was not just you guys talking together or talking with your doctor. Yeah. There was a lot of prayer involved there. Am I wrong?
No, you're not. It was a lot of prayer, a lot of research, a lot of study, a lot of tears, a lot of back and forth. But I mean, and this was early. This was very early in our process that we decided that this was our hard line as far as reproductive technologies we would go to and no farther. And IVF, we would not go up to IVF. That was our line. We were willing to try meds.
That again is part of what we were talking about as far as the argument starts. Yeah. Well, you're just trying to play God. That kind of mindset, even if they had arrived at, okay, we can try IVF, would not be playing God.
Yeah.
You're spending hours in tears on your knees praying, what would you have us do?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we then going to come back and say that the decision you have come to is just you trying to be God yourself?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, ultimately, it still is up to God because as good as we have gotten IVF and as good as we have gotten at transfers, there still has to be that extra something that takes that embryo and implants it into the uterus and allows a baby to be born 9 months later. Because once that transfer happens, it's now out of science's hands at that point, and we're back in the realm of, is God going to knit this baby together or not?
Imago Dei.
Yep.
And that's literally what it is. This baby will be made in the image of God.
Yes.
But the other part of what we are also able to say, even on this side of the discussion, is that even the babies that do not get implanted,
mm-hmm.
even the babies that don't even make it to embryo state,
yeah,
are still made in the image of God.
Yeah.
And because that is why we are able to value them every step of the way in this process instead of using them as some kind of political stepping stone.
Well, and I firmly believe that one reason why heaven is full of multitudes that cannot be numbered is because each and every single one of these babies that was conceived but failed to make it to any farther point is in heaven. I do not know what state they're in, but I believe that they are in heaven. So all these frozen embryos.
That statement there is one that, again, it brings up all sorts of things for different people.
Yeah.
That is not a, like, some far out theological idea. There has been a lot of theological work done for millennia on what happens to babies when they die.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we are going to say babies are what is in the womb, then that would include them.
Yep.
And so the idea go ahead.
If we are going to say that baby includes every sperm that has met egg and has started dividing, that includes that, which I believe it does, which means it will be multitudes among multitudes because We do not know how many cycles women have a sperm and egg, but don't fully get pregnant. And we obviously know that there's millions that have failed to make that point in the last 40 years due to IVF. But again, the purpose was to create life. It wasn't to kill babies. It was to give a chance. And I believe that these babies are in heaven.
And that's where, you know, we're now back full circle to where we were the last time you were on here, mm-hmm. where we then have to ask the question of what happens when it doesn't work, which if you want the theology behind that, you can go back and listen to the last time she was on. So, you know, most people listening are probably like, wow, they did not actually deal with IVF nearly as much as I thought they would. And so now I'm still confused. You should know by now with us, misfit wise at least, that if a guest is coming on and it seems like, wow, this is going to be a full science or full political topic, we're still going to end up heavy in the theology and only be getting there via the conversation that was started. So this is only episode 2 of season 4, supposedly. So if you have plenty to go back and learn that this is just how it is. But the bigger picture here is what we started with, which is the first problem with what happened in Alabama is that once again, we have politics that are harming others trying to be blamed on God.
Yeah.
That's never a good thing, no matter what position you take on the IVF or abortion or anything scale. We should all be able to agree that if a policy is put in place that is designed to harm other people, and it is being blamed on God as the reason for it, we should be against that kind of, at least, if nothing else, that type of wording within legislation. Plain and simple, that should be something everybody should be able to agree on. The IVF side of it, part of what we were doing was pointing to the fact that it is way more nuanced just because of the fact that people don't even know what it is to even know what it is they're arguing about. So if you want more information, all of that, how can people get a hold of you, Karen?
I am most likely to be found on Twitter at Too Fertile Church. That yes. is my hangout spot.
Yes, at Too Fertile Church. She is on some other places here and there, but that's where you'll find her most of the time. Occasionally, she does venture over into Threads, but just like me, we forget that it's there half the time.
So. I forget that it's there, and I need to be more active over there. But it's the same handle over on Threads. But yeah, I forget about it.
Yeah, Joanna from Bodies Behind the Bus keeps reminding me regularly that I told her I'd be more active over there with her, and then I keep forgetting. So, but yeah, at Too Fertile Church. You can also go to her guest profile on the website and you'll be able to find all of the different stuff, including a link, assuming that I remembered to put it on when we transferred everything to the new site. Are you still taking people for your survey?
I am not. I am in
okay, so I need to delete that link. So ignore what I just said.
Yes, I am in the transcription and coding phase. And, you know, I'm doing this by myself and I have like 50 hours to transcribe. So...
yeah. So, but yeah, what she's talking about, though, she is working on a project dealing with a lot of the stuff we just talked about, a lot of the stuff that we talked about last time, a lot of the stuff that we get drawn into online, all this different stuff, working within a better theological framework for the church to be able to deal with women's reproduction in general. Would that be a easy way to kind of lump it all together?
Yeah, and taking personal stories, because I interviewed like 20 different women and got their stories on dealing with infertility in the church, and I got the whole gamut of stories. So,
yeah. So be on the lookout for all that. She will be back. We know that because she will find some reason to try to, you know, twist my arm into saying that I owe her something to get back on here. Mm-hmm. So she'll be back, I'm sure. If nothing else, she'll be back once this project is finished. Probably before that as well. In the meantime, if you want to catch up on any of the other stuff we got going on, you can go to ministrymisfits.com. If you didn't check it out back at the end of season 3, we did update the website, and so it's a little bit easier to navigate, especially for those of you that are on mobile. You can also go and support the show at patreon.com/ministrymisfits, which we are currently in the middle. I don't know what week we're actually on, but we are currently in the middle of another Patreon Bible study. This year, we are walking through the book of Daniel. Tomiko and I are working our way through it, dealing with some of the stuff even that we just talked about as far as what it looks like to live in a pagan society, what actually our role is, what our role is not, how to actually be effective for both the kingdom of God and effective for the community around us. Good stuff, all of that. You can also go back and check out the Galatians Bible study if you join Patreon. You can do that at any of the different levels. Again, patreon.com/ministrymisfits. We've got some exciting stuff planned in terms of episodes coming up. Pastor Trey and I are working on schedules to get him back. We had a request to extend our conversation on atonement theories. We've got a group of guys that we normally are seeing hanging around each other on Twitter, but we also are somewhat all hanging around each other geographically as well. So we're going to do a couple of things with that as well. Some exciting stuff going on. I'm sure Joe will be back. I'm sure a lot of the other network guys will be back, as well as Brandon and Tomiko. So, Karen, thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having me.
It's not like it was hard to convince you since you volunteered yourself. But
yep,
you're back. We're back. Season 4 is underway, and we will see you all next week.
The Ministry Misfits podcast is a production of Ministry Misfit Media in association with Overwhelming Victory. Dr. Greg Linville and Andrew Fouts are our executive producers, and Brandon Simmons is associate producer. The Ministry Misfits theme song is written and produced by J.D. Laird and Laird Creative Agency. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us at ministrymisfitmedia@gmail.com or by following at Ministry Misfit on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. You can also visit our website at www.ministrymisfits.com or through bio.link/ministrymisfits. If you would like to support Ministry Misfits, you can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ministrymisfits.